Bandwidth for this podcast is provided by CacheFly at cachefly.com. This is the iPhone Alley Podcast, episode 37 from March 17th, 2009. It doesn't get any higher than the chalk log. All right, it is time for the iPhone Alley Podcast, the show where we discuss the iPhone, the iPod Touch, iTunes, all that good stuff. With me here tonight is Mr. Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, as always, great to be here. Thanks for having me on. And in honor of St. Patrick's Day, I do have a wee nip with me.
Wonderful. We always appreciate that.
Oh, sure.
Yep. And also, special guest, Mr. Jason Snell from Macworld Magazine is here. Hey, Jason.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. And finally, we wanted to get a developer on, and what better developer than Mr. Craig Hockenberry from the Icon Factory. Hey, Craig.
Hi.
Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me.
Yep. So tonight, the subject of the show is, of course, the Apple event that happened today, Tuesday. It was an SDK / iPhone 3.0 event, and there was a lot of stuff announced. A lot of fun stuff for developers and a lot of fun stuff for the end users as well. So let's talk about the developer stuff first. I think one of the biggest changes to the way apps are distributed is, in-app purchases they announced today, which allows for developers to sell content from within their application to apps that have already been purchased. So let's say you buy an ebook reader for 99 cents, and you know, obviously you want to read ebooks on there, so they have ostensibly ebooks for sale within the app. You can buy any of these ebooks from within the application, and that's all provided by Apple. And it's just, you know, you use your iTunes password. I guess all that stuff is stored by Apple on the iTunes server, so you don't have to keep selling new applications for, you know, each updated piece of content. So whether it's an ebook or if you want to sell more levels for a game, something like that. Craig, I know you don't really do that many applications where, you know, you'd want to sell content, but what do you think about this? What do you think developers think? This is a good thing for developers or end users?
I think it's a good thing for a certain class of applications, applications that are more oriented towards content, like you said, games with levels and things like that, than apps that are productivity apps or like that. It seems definitely to something that's to keep the game developers happy.
They didn't
address the problem that a lot of developers are asking about, and that's the ability to do demos. But this is another step in the App Store that's in the right direction. So good.
Right. I would like to see demos. I think that would maybe even more so than selling content from within the application. That I think demos would be even more important to developers, because it's really, I mean, right now you see a lot of applications where you have the light version and then you have the paid version, and not even where it's like an ad-supported thing in one spot. It's like you only have a lot of limited ability, and I guess that's why they'd call it a light application. So it's free, so you can try it out and see what it's kind of like, and then you can go and buy the application.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. I mean, you know, for example, you know, the free version of Twitterific. I mean, can we put a link in there that says, you know, buy the full version and just, you know, turn the free version into a paid version?
Right. Yeah, that would be really handy for developers. And I think that would be more of a demo thing as well. But I guess you could build in some kind of, you know, you could tell your application, well, you know, if this is set up this way with, you know, you buy this little like P list or something that says, okay, this is the pro version.
Yeah. In my applications, it's one variable.
Right. Exactly. And thankfully that, you know, if you can't go in and change that stuff though, because then it ruins the code signing and all that, thankfully. So it makes it easy for you guys to do that.
We'll see how it plays out. I mean, it's like I said, it's a step in the right direction.
Yeah.
They're not cheaper than we want, but you got to give Apple credit for, you know, fixing things in incremental fashion.
Yeah, and I definitely don't think they're, you know, just artificially holding back anything. They're definitely working on a lot of stuff. And still, you know, the iPhone isn't the snappiest thing, you know, always. Occasionally you have to restart it and you have those kind of problems, but they're working on performance and they're working on stuff to appease the developers and all that. The one thing that kind of freaked me out about the in-app purchase is there are a lot of games where I think developers might be more willing to kind of cut back on what they offer on the initial version in favor of making you pay later on for more levels. So, you know, like if you bought a Super Monkey Ball for, you know, $10 or whatever, maybe they cut back the levels by half and then you have to pay, you know, another $5. And so, I don't know, maybe there could be some price gouging there, but we'll have to wait and see how that works out. I think it's a little odd that, you know, on one hand, it makes sense that they don't allow free applications to have the in-app purchases. But if it's like an ebook reader, they're going to include an ebook with the first version, because you have to charge 99 cents in order to get the in-app purchases to work out, because you can't offer that with a free app.
So yeah. The example that they gave during the presentation this morning of, you know, buying weapons, that to me just sounds like a bad way to do it.
Oh, I completely agree. I saw that as well. And yeah, buying weapons from within a game, for one, it seems like it's unfair.
The guy who's got more money is the one who has the advantage. That's not how most games, or at least how games that I enjoy playing, should work, right? It's skill, not, you know,
right,
how big bankroll is.
It's definitely more like life on one hand, but it doesn't seem as fair. So hopefully we don't see that happen with a lot of these. And there have been, you know, we weren't too sure about how developers would handle the first App Store and, you know, the kind of freedoms that Apple gave them. And it seems to be working out. So hopefully this will work out as well. Also, new for developers is the P2P connectivity. So you can use two or more, I should say, iPhones together to get, you know, you can play games together, you can share any type of data together. So whether it's, you know, flicking a, you know, an address book card across to another guy, or, you know, playing a game like a battleship or something like that. What do you guys think? Fantastic. I think it's great.
My initial reaction was, you know, I can see that being real useful for games, and probably some other types of social applications. And, you know, exchanging business cards is just a form of social application. But beyond that, there's some privacy issues. You know, it's like, do I really want to be able to share my contacts with just any random old person? You know, how does it, you know, we don't know enough about it right now to say whether, you know, what it's going to look like.
I think Apple is definitely aware of that sort of thing. And that's why you have to, you know, when you pair the remote application with an Apple TV or your iTunes library, you have to type in a code that, you know, is randomly generated right then, just so you know that you're authenticating. I'm sure they're going to have like either a code or, you know, some sort of like, is this okay type of dialogue to make sure that, yeah, this is you doing this and you're okay with it.
Yeah, but part of the beauty of such a system of sharing information is that it's seamless, right? And if you have all these authentication things, it's not necessarily seamless. So, you know, that kind of stuff gets in the way of the experience, but I agree that it's needed. Right. But if you have to type in, you know, figure out what a 3 or 4 digit number is in order to share your business card with somebody, that you just gonna say, well, here's my email address, you know, shoot me an email. And
right.
That's easier that way.
Jason, have you played with many multiplayer games?
Oh, multiplayer games, certainly not on the iPhone, but I have in the past. You know, and it's an interesting idea. Like Craig, I think there are a lot of great game applications for this sort of thing. Socially, yeah, in conferences or classrooms or places like that where you might end up with kind of an interesting group chat environment or, you know, maybe not note-taking, but, you know, some kind of group activity. I think that there's potential there. I think it's very clever that they're using Bluetooth to do ad hoc communication. That's pretty smart since, you know, the dumb way to do it would be to have everybody have to get on the same Wi-Fi network. So I think it's pretty smart that they're using Bluetooth to do that instead.
Right. Yeah, with quite a few of the multiplayer games that, you know, allow you to communicate between iPhones, you do need to use a Wi-Fi network, a shared Wi-Fi network.
Right, exactly.
So it's inconvenient if you're, you know, in the car or somewhere that you can't either set up an ad hoc network or you're not near a Wi-Fi hotspot. Otherwise, it's beautiful when you can, you know, play your friends with Light Bike or, you know, whatever else. I think you can. There are many, many games that allow that kind of thing over Wi-Fi, and I think that's just one step ahead, you know, beyond that of what developers are having to do, because I'm assuming they have to implement that kind of thing, some amount of the code on their own, kind of reinvent the wheel every time for, you know, getting those phones to talk back and forth with each other. You know, obviously there's still Bonjour in there and that is a lot of what they're doing, but still, I think it's a fantastic thing. And I think that, you know, what we're thinking of right now, as far as, you know, games and exchanging contacts, we're going to see a lot more just really unique ideas, I think, with this sort of connectivity. And I'm really glad that they're finally opening up the Bluetooth to more than just the mono audio for microphone and headphone.
Oh yeah, that's big. That's we've been waiting for that for a long time, and using Bluetooth in smart ways in general, I think, is something that we've seen from this announcement, and that's good because the iPhone's Bluetooth support before was pretty awful. So it's good to see that.
Yeah, we're gonna see. We've got now stereo audio, so A2DP, which is something a particular forum member has just constantly whined about on our forums. I think, you know, every other story, it seems like the same guy. Just, you know, if it's an announcement about the iPhone, he says, but there's no, you know, stereo audio over Bluetooth. So I think it's finally he's going to be quiet. But it's really good to see that because it's just one of those features that, you know, we haven't seen in the iPhone. It's just been, you know, why isn't it there? And we're also seeing Bluetooth accessories can now use the Bluetooth stack as well, and they can create their own protocols as well as using the standard Bluetooth protocols.
And the same for the dock connector. I mean, that's sort of a 1-2 punch that you'll be able to apps will be able to talk out the dock connector to devices, which is a big opens up a lot of different interesting areas where people will come up with things to attach to the dock connector that work with an app, which is very cool.
Yeah, absolutely. And the one example they gave was, you know, plugging in your iPhone to a speaker dock, and then up pops an EQ for, you know, adjusting the audio in the speaker dock. And that's just one of those things that they can do because they can communicate now out of the dock connector. And the one thing that I'm curious about is whether or not you would have to go to the app store and find the correct app that corresponds with your hardware and download it and then install it and then open it every time you want to, you know, play with those kind of controls. Or is it more of a, like when you plug your iPod into the car, you get a special, well, it's not really that special. It's just an image that says your car is now controlling it. But I wonder if the dock connector, the accessory that you're plugging in can say, you know, here's the application that you display, you know, and then you can use it from there. I don't know if that would actually work out.
I don't know. They might say you need to go download this, but that's a question about, you know, can you with this OS have a specific app that you can tie to an action of something being inserted in the dock connector or not? There are a lot of questions that we're not going to really know the answer to until it ships about how this stuff works. But right. It certainly the potential is there. I sort of imagine you would have to go to the App Store and download the free app, though. I don't think it's going to be able to just shoot you the app over the connection.
Yeah, not yet, at least. I'm sure we'll see that in 4.0.
Right, one day.
But so
one question I've got is with this P2P stuff going through Bluetooth, you know, is that going to be available at the same time you're using your Bluetooth headset? I mean, is it? I don't know enough about Bluetooth. I mean, this is just a kind of a newbie kind of question. But
I don't know either. I'm thinking that you can do that, like if you have a Bluetooth headset going and at the same time you do some data. Jeff, do you know anything along those lines?
Well, a lot of it depends on the device itself. So like your Bluetooth headsets, they're designed to talk to a single device. But your Mac or your PC with a Bluetooth chip in it has the ability to talk to multiple Bluetooth devices at once. I don't see any reason why that couldn't be included in the iPhone as well. It's a full-blown computer stuck in your pocket, and it has OS X running on it. So there's no reason why Apple couldn't include the calls that are necessary so that it can manage multiple Bluetooth devices
right
at the same time.
And it does support A2DP, at least the 3G. I'm not sure. Jason, do you know if the original iPhone won't support the stereo Bluetooth, right?
Right. The original iPhone, the two things they called out that it won't support, it will run it, it will be a free update, but it won't support A2DP stereo Bluetooth audio. And it won't support MMS, oddly enough. They say that the for whatever reason, the radio is not compatible.
Interesting. And I don't know enough about how MMS works.
No, that one's a head-scratcher to me, but that's what they say. And they said I actually asked about that, and they said that it was a hardware issue. It's not a contractual issue or something else. They say the hardware, you know, maybe the hardware can do it, but obviously if it can, it can't do it well enough for them to enable it. So they're just saying no.
Right. Yeah.
The interesting thing to me is that the only reason I want that MMS is so that when my sister-in-law sends me a photo, I don't get that stupid link in the SMS application that I can never remember what the username and the password. It's just like it's really hard to get into the thing to view it online, right? It's
right.
Safari. So.
Yeah, that's a horrible setup.
Well, at least now you can copy and paste it.
Yeah.
Huh.
The thing I found interesting is that the second generation iPod has had Bluetooth in it this whole time and, you know, been not on the tech specs sheet.
Well,
or
it's funny you should mention that because I know people talked about it because the frequency that's used by the Nike Plus, which it's compatible with, the new Nike Plus receiver that you put in your shoe is the Bluetooth frequency. And so a lot of people were saying they thought it was a custom version of a Bluetooth capable chip. It was running some custom software to talk to the Nike Plus. And when I asked them today about that, they sort of looked at each other like, okay, should we say, all right, and said, yes, it will be enabled with the software. So it's been, you know, which is great because I had that same thought, which is like, wow, the iPod Touch users are totally screwed because they're going to have all this Bluetooth-based stuff and it's not going to work with the Touch. And now it turns out with the second-generation Touch, it will.
Yeah, the other interesting part about it is that it kind of softens the, you know, the $995 upgrade fee that all the iPod Touch users are going to have to pay, right? Because they're not doing the accounting the same way that they are with the phone.
Right. Yeah.
So they're going to be getting a lot of Bluetooth functionality for that $10, and you know maybe Apple had that planned all along.
And they're also going to be able to do the peer-to-peer connectivity. Now, Jason, do you know if the original iPod Touch will work with the peer-to-peer, maybe over Wi-Fi or something?
I doubt it. I think it's just not a no-go because all the peer-to-peer stuff is happening in Bluetooth, and there's no Bluetooth radio in that original.
Right.
Yeah, but the original one, that's another good reason to upgrade your first generation to the second generation.
Right.
I fully intend to do that. Right. I've been using a first generation, you know, the original one from doing the development. All the initial development on, and it's definitely, you know, now that it doesn't have all these things, I'm going to need it. So,
yeah, definitely. So, what else do we have here? Embedded Maps API. So they're going to allow, excuse me, developers to use the maps, the core of the maps application to embed maps into their applications, and it was unclear as they were initially announcing it, but I watched the video. We will be able to use the Google Map tiles. Developers will be able to do that for just standard, you know, here's a map, you know, find your location, all that kind of stuff. That's all fine and dandy with Apple. The only time they will not, they mentioned, you know, you have to bring your own map tiles. The only time you have to do that, correct me if I'm wrong, Jason, is if you're doing a turn-by-turn.
Right. It's not even Google's Maps because Google licenses the maps. So the license that Google has to re-license it doesn't cover turn-by-turn because that's a very lucrative business. So if you want to do turn-by-turn, you have to license maps, or if you own maps, you can use those, which is why when we see turn-by-turn, it's actually interesting if you think about the content thing. You'll probably be able to buy a turn-by-turn app and then within the app buy map packs for it for regions using the in-app e-commerce.
Yeah, I was assuming that's what would happen too.
So you're basically paying for the road data.
Yeah.
You know, where the roads are.
But the good thing is the road data will be then loaded on your iPhone. So if you lose, the problem with Google Maps right now is if you lose the digital data connection on the cell network, the maps don't update anymore. Some of them are cached a little bit, but there's no detail. And if it's all loaded on there, it doesn't matter if you have no connection and you're out in the middle of nowhere, it'll still have the map data.
Right. Yeah,
they'll still have GPS at that point too.
Yep,
exactly.
Yeah, I have gotten the little blue dot on no map before, which is a little weird. It just kind of keeps moving along, and I just don't know where I am. I guess we didn't really go into it, but yeah, they're going to be allowing turn by turn, and I think they've had actually turn by turn applications on the App Store. They haven't rejected any of them, but they've been very, you know, custom applications. So now developers can actually use the core location stuff for those applications, and so they'll be much easier to develop, and I'm sure we'll see some soon some very good applications. And we're also going to see finally the push notification server. Apple says that it is ready, and the reason it didn't come out initially when they said it was supposed to, I guess in September, was because when the App Store launched, they didn't anticipate just the sheer amount of apps that were going to be submitted and downloaded. So they had to, I guess they said over a period of 6 months, they were retooling and redoing the entire server architecture and actually working with carriers and figuring out the most efficient ways of doing it. So they're not going to be allowing background processes on the phone because they say that, you know, they played around with background processes on other phones and it, you know, it runs down the standby time by, you know, up to 80% with a background process, just, you know, not even doing anything, just sitting there waiting for something. On the other hand, I think it was 23% that the push notification server kind of takes away. So I guess that, you know, we'll have a little switch in the preferences to turn off push notifications as we do for location data. So Craig, because you're the developer, I assume that you're totally waiting for, and you've been waiting for push notifications. Are you happy with just getting push notifications, or are you kind of let down that we didn't get a background process or something more?
I mean, you can make a case for both, right? I mean, there's some stuff that you would want to do in the background that the only way you can do it is in the background. But I think push notifications are a good thing for certain class of applications. One of the problems I personally have is you know, everybody's asking about, you know, push notifications for Twitterific. And the problem there is that the push notification actually needs to come from the source, which is Twitter itself, not any kind of server that I run. And I can bet that, or not bet, but I would guess that Apple probably doesn't want initially a service that generates upwards of 100 messages per second to be on this system. I mean, maybe they scale it up so that it can handle something like that. But I'd like to see it happen.
Right. So with Twitterific and specifically, would you have to run a server that talks to Twitter? And then
no, see, that's the thing. I can't do it. It's got to come from Twitter. The push notification would have to, you know, somebody tweets something, right? It goes onto Twitter's server. Twitter's server notices that there's a new tweet and forwards it onto Apple for that user. And that happens hundreds of times a second.
Right.
The fire hose that comes out of Twitter is pretty staggering in the amount of data that they push out.
Right. So, but the way that the push notification server is set up, could your application somehow tie directly into the fact that all you need to do is talk to Twitter, or would you have to have a server in between Twitter?
The only way for us to do it right now without Twitter's help is to have a server in between, and that's a recipe for disaster.
Right. That's not something you can really even manage.
You know, you saw some of that happen with Twinkle, right? You know, they had all that social networking stuff, you know, and the nearby feature, because they were running basically as a middleman between Twitter and the iPhone application. And it generated all sorts of problems when that middleman started having problems, you know, with scaling, right? You know, look at the problems that Twitter had scaling their system up to handle, you know, tens of millions of users, you know, hundreds of messages per second. You know, it's not an insignificant amount of work to do that middleman server.
Right. So Apple needs to do something where a middleman server isn't necessarily required for stuff like a Twitter client or an AIM client.
Well, you know, with somebody like AIM, right, they control both ends, right? They control the application on your iPhone and the server, you know, the
right, and they can do something easily on their end because they're AIM. But you know, if you take a company like Beehive, for example, you know, they're not directly tied to AOL.
Right, right. It's the people who are adding value to an existing network service that are going to have problems.
Right,
because they're disassociated from that origin of service.
Right, and hopefully I've talked to the Beehive guys, and they're excited and ready to try and make it happen. They do actually have a middleman server that they run for you know, doing push notifications via email, but it's going to be interesting to see how. And they also have the persistent connection thing, but it's going to be interesting to see how that kind of stuff scales up for Apple, because you know, once they add in the push notification server, because Apple makes it seem like, okay, it's a really simple thing to do. All you do is you just kind of forward your traffic up to our, you know, little cloud server, and then we'll do all the rest of that, you know, work. But, you know, with, like you said, Craig, all the ones who aren't necessarily using their own personal service, but they're just kind of adding value to it, are going to have a problem because they have to have a middleman server, at least right now, the way they have it set up. So, and I'm sure that, you know, Apple has thought of Twitter, at the very least Twitter and AIM, with the push notification server. So,
yeah, you know, personally, I think it's if you step back and look at what do I want to be notified about, the example that they gave with ESPN is probably something that's more likely to be something that people want to get notifications about than, you know, oh, I got a new direct message with Twitter, right? Twitter is kind of it's not a primary thing, right? It's just sort of an interstitial source of information. I mean, I don't sit around all day and look at Twitter and, you know, wait for every new message to come in. It's just like, okay, I'm compiling some software. I'm going to go look at Twitter for 5 minutes.
Right.
So,
there are a lot of people.
You could almost make the argument that you don't really need push notifications with Twitter, but I know a lot of people want them, you know, and I'm going to definitely work towards doing something with them.
Yeah. There are certainly a lot of people who use Twitter's SMS service, who, you know, get every single tweet pushed to their phone, and they definitely do want all of those. And you know, we look at Twitter from the perspective of people who have, you know, tons and tons and tons of followers, and possibly even follow hundreds of people on Twitter, and you know, having that fire hose constantly on and directed at your phone and kind of not being able to avoid that would be overwhelming. But I think for people who maybe, you know, have 10 friends that they follow on Twitter, and that's just kind of how they...
Yeah, those people are using it as group SMS, which is a valid way to use it, right? And that's why I said that's I can understand why people want to do this. It's
right,
and it's definitely there's some value there,
right?
But I think the people that are really going to grab onto this and do some interesting things with it are the people that are providing content, right? You know, if there was a Macworld iPhone application, right, that told me that, I mean, I love reading the iPhone reviews that are in the Macworld feed, right? And there's a notification that says, oh, there's a new iPhone, you know, iPhone review. Yeah, that's cool. That, you know, it's like the guy who wants, you know, is following his favorite sports team, right? And ESPN tells him, you know, they won a game. Go here to read more.
Right. Exactly.
That makes him very happy, right? And that's where I think the interesting things are going to happen. It allows people to tune the notifications to their interests, right? You know, SMS is interesting because, you know, it's somebody trying to get in contact with you. You know, a new mail message, that's interesting. Somebody trying to get in contact with you. But this is more like something out there in the world has happened. Tell me that it's happened, which is a little bit different.
Jason, you're big on Twitter. What do you think about having a... Would you want your push notifications coming from Twitter?
No, I used to think I did, and then I talked to Craig. and I see his point of view. I could see the advantage of something like saying there are 15 new messages on Twitter. You know, every 5 minutes, every 10 minutes, it's basically telling you how many messages are queuing up behind there. I can sort of see that. But I think he's right. Things that require direct knowledge, like an IM has come in or a sports score or something like that, that makes a lot more sense. It's really a complicated thing, though. I think Craig really puts it well, that you're dealing with huge amounts of data. They have to go through Apple. Who's going to be able to build an intermediary service? And they're, you know, that it's going to be a limited group, and there are going to be lots of issues with that, like we saw with Twinkle. And the fact that it will put the keys to a lot of this stuff in the hands of the people who are running the big servers, which makes it bad. You know, it's great if you're AIM. It's bad if you're Adium or if you're Meebo, I suppose, because you have to actually, you know, build some kind of intermediary, and they own the main network. You're just the intermediary. So it'll be interesting to see how it goes. I mean, I don't think it's an alternative to background apps. I think it solves a certain fraction of the apps that you don't need to run in the background. Notification solves it for you. It doesn't solve it for a lot of other apps. So it's sort of a halfway point. And I know Apple says that background apps will drain your battery. That's totally true. But what they're saying is, we're not going to let you do that. We're not going to let you even try. And the fact is, there are background apps on the phone. They're Apple's apps, right? I mean, the iPod keeps playing when you switch to other apps. That's running in the background.
Right.
So it can be done. And I think that's a good example where I hate that when I'm listening to internet radio on my iPhone, I can't switch over and see what's on Twitter because the radio will go away. And I'd like that to be in the background, but it can't be done, even though the iPod itself can. So I don't know. It solves some of these problems, but it also fails to solve others.
Right. I think that, and I've said this before, I think that to solve like another 15% of that, if they allowed developers to plug into some sort of, well, the same service that the calendar currently uses. So whenever you get an alert from your calendar that says, you know, you have an appointment in an hour, if developers, like let's say you're doing a to-do app, and you want to have reminders of whatever your to-dos are, if that application could just plug into whatever that service that's already running, there's no added impact on your battery there. It's just kind of adding things to that schedule of, you know, when to throw up a reminder. And then maybe for like media applications that at least play audio, you can have a just like a media process, just like a media API that developers can plug into and use that instead of, you know, doing their own custom player or just doing the standard in-application player. So I'm sure there's more that Apple can do to work around the background process thing. And we're just going to have to wait and see that, wait till 6.0.
One of the slides did mention streaming. So it may be that there's audio streaming in there and that you'll either be able to do it from the iPod app or a third party will be able to point you at a stream and have it open in the OS's music player, audio player, and that will get around it. It's possible, but audio apps are a good example where it's running because you can hear it.
Right.
And I think the stealth apps are the problem, and something like audio apps, if Apple, maybe there should be a special class of apps that Apple grants special powers to do things like run in the background. And I think audio apps are a good example of that, where it is something you want to do while you're doing something else. And if it's good enough for the iPod, maybe it should be good enough for a radio tuner.
Yeah. And we've also seen, Jeff, you're going to.
No, I was going to say that's a really excellent point, Jason. There's the part of the problem with the battery drain is, and I discovered this early on, right? It's like I was, working on the jailbreak stuff, right? Running the stuff in the background wasn't a problem. It's the things that happen that you don't know that are happening that come and bite you in the butt. Right. And if there's music playing or there's some sort of source of audio, something's going on in the background. Right. It's like the iPod. Right. That it's working and playing music in the background. That's fine. So that's a very interesting observation. Right. If there can be some way to let people know that these background applications are actually doing something for you.
Well, I think that's what, if you look at the
make a decision.
If you look at the pre OS, I was actually at some point I realized how cool the tile idea is, because right, they have each application runs on its little quote unquote tile thing, and I thought it was very gimmicky when I first saw it, but it makes sense to me now because that's a visual representation of all the applications that are running, and if you want to get rid of one, you swipe it away and it's gone and it's quit. So I was thinking maybe if Apple did implement background processes, they could do, they would do something that's a lot more visual, but they would have to kind of change the paradigm a little bit of how applications look and feel and work when they're running. So I mean, obviously we're not going to see background processes now. Hopefully the push notification server will work out and it won't be a big, terrible problem like MobileMe was when it first debuted, and it seems like they've been working really hard and they don't want to have a repeat of that. Some other APIs that they've allowed, they're allowing access to now to the proximity sensor, and I think that was a special thing that they gave to Google for their Google application, so you can put it up to your ear and then just immediately start talking. And also the built-in voice chat, which is very cool. So they showed, I think it was a NG Moco first-person shooter game that actually used the built-in voice chat stuff. So it's essentially a voice, a VoIP API that developers can just kind of hook into and say, hey, I want to go, audio chat with, so-and-so. And then that just works over the phone like it would if you're, I guess you have to be over Wi-Fi for that kind of thing to work out, but it's very cool. So let's move on to the additions for the end users. Obviously, copy and paste, we now have that. Jason, what do you think of the or Jeff? Jeff, you haven't spoken, and I think you've sipped on your beverage for a little bit. You want to talk about copy and paste?
Sure. And just to be very clear, you guys have been doing a great job of entertaining me, so thank you very much.
Well, we want you to entertain us now.
Oh, all right. Well, I guess that's only fair. All right. So the copy and paste thing, I am so glad that it's finally going to be here, because that's a feature that I would use all the time. And when I was a Palm user, and I had a Palm before I got my iPhone, I used the copy and paste feature all the time. And so that's something that I've been sorely missing ever since I got my iPhone. And as far as people complaining about, well, we can't be happy that that feature's there because it should have been in iPhone 1.0, people want something to bitch about, and if this is what it is for them, okay, great. The way I see it, I'm just glad that the feature is finally there. I wish it had been there earlier, sure, but I'm really glad that it's there, and I'm glad that it's a system-wide thing and that they didn't limit it to specific applications, because that would have just sucked. So I'm really looking forward to playing with that feature.
You got to wonder why it took them so long, though. It doesn't seem like it. I mean, the way they bring up the copy-paste dialogue isn't that impressive. I mean, it's just a double click, a double tap, and I'm sure, you know, in their, you know, maybe even in their second week of brainstorming for how to bring up a dialogue like that, that at some point that did come up, you know, fairly early on, to just like double tap or just to hold down like you do, for, you know, saving an image in Safari, which just side note, I wish, you know, you could tap and hold on a link and have it, you know, say, hey, I want to open this in a new tab, but that's beside, you know, what we're talking about.
You know, I think the reason that we haven't seen the feature yet is because Apple didn't see any value in investing the resources into adding that feature. There were other things that they were more concerned about. And seeing something like copy and paste show up now, along with the ability to attach other devices to the dock, along with this open access to Bluetooth, what that tells me is that Apple gets that if they want to be able to really dominate in this market, they have to compete across the board. And so now they have to start looking at the features that you already have on other devices or will be coming out on other devices and find ways to match those features or to be better than those features. And that's why we're seeing cut and paste show up now, because that's something that you're going to see everywhere else. That's why we can get at the dock now. That's why we can do the Bluetooth now.
Right. And I think that it's a really obvious, you know, target to look at. But I think the Palm Pre is kind of motivating a lot of this, because they're, oh my gosh, I can't, John Rubinstein, he was one of the main guys in kind of coming up with the hardware for the iPod, the initial 1.0 iPod. So I think that, you know, that's kind of a, you know, now something that Apple is just kind of sore about. They look at the Palm Pre and they say, well, we can't let them beat us with this stuff, so we have to get all of it in there. And you can even look at some of the other stuff, the Spotlight feature that they also announced. They announced that, you know, you can now search across, you can search for applications, you can search for certain content in the core application, so you can search for stuff in mail, calendars, I guess contacts as well, and the iPod. So you can go to each of those applications and run a search. It doesn't search through the content of the mail, but it'll search through content of notes and all that other stuff. But you can also get to a universal Spotlight search from the home screen, just like you can on your Mac now. And that looks...
This is all really exciting to me, because what I'm seeing is that the game is finally really on. And so we're going to have this strong competition between Apple and Palm and RIM and all these other companies that really want to dominate in the smartphone market. And they're all going to have to keep working harder and harder to have that innovation that the other guy doesn't have. And ultimately, that means it doesn't matter if you use an iPhone, a BlackBerry, a Pre, or whatever. As consumers, we're all going to win, because these companies now have to really step it up a notch and make better and better products for us.
Exactly.
So right. I think this isn't great. About Apple winning. It's about making better products. And Apple on its own will advance the ball a little bit, but it will advance the ball a whole lot more if it's motivated by competitors who are also advancing the ball. So it is, I agree, it's great to see. And I do think there had to be some reaction here from Apple to Android and Palm Pre. And it's good. It's good that they have that reaction.
Absolutely.
This is just like Nikon and Canon, right? It's, you know, the Pre is going to come out and Apple's going to do something better than that they did. And then the Pre is going to do something better than the iPhone did. And then the iPhone's going to do something better than the Pre did. And it's a great way to motivate companies to do new things.
Now does the Palm Pre doesn't record video, does it? Anybody know?
As far as we know, it does nothing. Right.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, there is that.
But I don't think they announced, you know, here's a recording of video. That was one of those things that I was kind of confused that we didn't see was video recording.
The problem, I think, with video recording is not so much the recording of the video, it's the compressing of it.
Yeah, definitely. Although, you know, cheap phones do it. So, I guess they could introduce, I guess with their next iPhone, they could, you know, introduce a chip in there, a hardware encoder for that kind of thing, and say, hey, you know, get the new iPhone super shiny, and it has video in it too. And
you can record I'm sure they would do video recording on the current hardware with the new OS if they felt that it would be good enough. And I think the hardware just isn't good enough for Apple's taste. I mean, we know you can do it because of jailbreak, but it's not very good.
Right.
So I would imagine. I mean, the biggest knock on the iPhone, I think, maybe is the camera. So a camera upgrade with video would be a natural.
Yeah, that'd be a definite increase in, you know, a reason to upgrade for sure.
And, you know, to be honest, as far as the background processing is concerned, I think it'll happen in the iPhone 4G or whatever they call it, because they'll add more memory, right? The specs will bump, you know, big, like Jason just said, you know, better camera, more memory, faster CPU, you know, background processes.
Yeah.
You know, that's how they're going to sell it.
Those are the rumors that I've heard. I've heard that
there's not a lot of memory. That's the problem right now. It's like every software developer struggles with the footprint of their application, right? Because you get over a certain value of, you know, certain watermark, and the OS just shuts you down, right?
Dan Warren and I were laughing on the way back from the event about the fact that, of course, Apple's against background processing, but you know that if Apple had hardware that could robustly support background processing, and that's RAM and maybe battery life, then they would be all in favor of it.
Oh yeah.
If only they came up with like a battery with wheels on it that you could like wheel around like luggage, then they would have like background processes on there totally. If they could market that efficiently as an accessory, the wheel my battery around pack. I don't know. I'm making
stuff
up.
They have, I'm sure in one of the labs, they still have a Mac luggable sitting around. So they already have a form factor in place.
Yeah. They can, as long as they, you know, put some casters on a battery and figure out a way to plug that into the 30-pin dot connector, then they'll add it. But that's not very portable. Although you have the casters. Also, they announced MMS for the new SMS application is not called SMS anymore. It's called Messages, and you can send. Of course, you can still send SMS, but you can also do multimedia messages from the application, and that's something that I think at some point we had a consensus going on the show that Apple was never going to add MMS. Jeff,
yeah, well, we were wrong, weren't we? you know, the way I see it. Yeah, it sure is. And my crystal ball is still in the shop. You know, the whole MMS thing, I'm not that excited about it, other than to know that when the one relative I have that likes to send me MMS messages all the time, I'll actually be able to look at them now. Actually, that's probably not a good thing, because I probably really don't care what's in these messages that are being sent to me. So
you've always just ignored them. And
I have. So that's like not a big deal for me. But I know for a lot of people, the whole MMS thing is really big. So I can see why that's been added in. And much to everyone's surprise, Apple does not cater to my personal desires for every feature on the iPhone. So I guess they're going to include things for other people too.
I think I would use the MMS for photos occasionally, nothing, you know. But for the most part, I think when I would use it is in receiving a message from someone who is sending me an MMS, and I haven't already beat them over the head with a 2x4 and told them to not send me MMSs. And I think that's just another one of those things that I think you have to pay differently for MMS. You don't. That's more than a text message or a different charge, I should say.
Yeah, I was just going to ask if the carriers are making money off of MMS. This may be driven by somebody other than Apple.
Yeah. And you can also send audio, of course, with MMS, not video, because, you know, what video would you send? Because you can't make any video. But you can do audio. They have a new voice memos application also included. And you can just simply record a voice memo. You can record a lecture, and then you can actually edit that down and save it, email it, send it as an MMS, whatever you want. I don't know. Jason, do you know if that's going to be something that's just included with the OS, or if it's something that you like the remote app that you download?
The MMS?
Voice memos app.
Oh, voice memos. Voice memos is included. And I suspect it was written specifically because you can send them as MMSs. And, you know, the immediate reaction is that all the other voice recording apps are dead. And I don't think that's true, because if it's true to what Apple does, it'll be a very simple voice memo that'll have a couple of features, and then it won't do anything but, you know, email or MMS. And a bunch of the other voice recording apps are quite good and do all sorts of different things and let you set different settings and FTP them or transfer them via Bonjour. So there's still some opportunity there. But my understanding is voice record is just going on the device, that it's one of the new stock apps.
Gotcha. And also, I didn't mention with the MMS thing, you can also now send contact info and location info. And I guess you can, you know, select individual messages and delete them, or forward them if you want to. And I think that deleting more than forwarding is going to be useful, because every once in a while there's a message that you just, Jeff, I think you know about this. You just, something happened and you sent out a text message and you look at it the next morning and, geez, where did that come from?
Yeah, and that just shouldn't be there anymore. I can't imagine that ever happening to anyone.
Well, not to you, certainly, but.
Certainly not me.
Right. You can follow Jeff on Twitter at twitter.com/jgamut and get his drunken tweets whenever that happens.
Not very often. Just often enough to hopefully be entertaining.
Well, maybe tonight anyway, because it's St. Patrick's Day.
It is St. Patrick's Day. So, but, you know, my glass of Jameson is actually almost empty. So I'm not going to be drinking more until after we're done recording.
Yeah. So the real fun happens after that.
Exactly.
Yep. Also, notes can be synced through iTunes, finally. And we'll have to see how that works out.
Yes, to an undisclosed location.
Is that what they said?
Well, no, they didn't say anything about it. And somebody asked me afterward, so what? How does that work? And I said, I have no idea. Mystery. Maybe there's something in iTunes. Maybe there's something in Snow Leopard. Maybe it syncs to the same repository that generates. Well, you have to-do lists, and they didn't talk about to-do lists. I don't know. It's so mysterious. Hopefully it will be good, but, you know, I don't know. I'm kind of mystified by Apple's ambivalence about notes and to-dos on the iPhone.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know, but I have a theory on why notes and to-dos have never been an issue for Apple on the iPhone. And that's because Apple internally hasn't been using iCal. So what do they care if the feature works or not? They have their own system that they're using, and so they're not going to be focusing on features that aren't impacting them to that degree.
Did you mention that on Twitter or something? Because they don't actually use iCal, is that true?
Right. I think they're using Meeting Maker internally.
Interesting.
One thing regarding the syncing, you know, it's great that Notes is going to sync. I mean, that's something that everybody's wanted. But something that a lot of developers have wanted is to make that a system kind of service, right? You know, like sync services on the Mac, you know, something that all developers can use. Because, you know, you look at the number of people, you know, some apps use FTP, some apps use web dev, some of them sync them to your iDisk, some of them sync them with Bonjour, some of them, you know, they've got a special website out there that it gets synced to. And there's all these different things, ways that data gets synced, right? I mean, you've got data on your phone, you want to get it off the phone. I mean, we've all seen the problem with that with notes, right? It's like, I want to get my notes off the device other than in an email message.
Right.
So, and everybody's inventing these ways of doing this, but from a user's point of view, that's really kind of a pain in the butt, because I only want to do it one way, right? I want to manage one thing. I don't want to have to manage an FTP site for one app and a web dev for another and an iDisk for another. And, you know, it's just a hassle, right? You know, it's just sync all the stuff to my Mac and, you know, call it a day.
Yeah. I guess with the notes, it would probably sync to just like a documents, a folder called, you know, iPhone notes or something like that. But, you know, I guess we'll see it once. The iPhone 3.0, I should say, is available for developers today. And I know that a few developers, I'm pretty sure Sam Steele, who does Last.fm, has already started using it, and it works, supposedly. So, I mean, in the next couple of days, I'm sure we're going to hear about those little itty-bitty details from developers who are willing to leak that juicy information to us.
Actually, if you do hear from developers in the next few days, they're stupid developers.
Yes.
Because I just clicked on an agreement that said, don't talk about this. And
yeah,
I'm not going to talk about it.
The key word here is redacted, which is everybody's supposed to be keeping a secret. Although there are already screenshots on Engadget, but everybody is under NDA about this.
The good thing this time around is that we know that when 3.0 ships, we'll be able to talk about it.
Right.
That was the big problem last time, is that we all got pissed off because, you know, I respect Apple's need to keep things secret while things are being developed and things are going to change. You know, certain things are going to be taken out, new things are going to be put in, that's fine. But let us talk about it after you're done.
I think they've learned their lesson this time.
Yeah. Well, and I think if they haven't seen the benefit within the development community of the NDA being lifted, they're not looking very hard.
Right. And one other thing I forgot to mention, you can now do multi-photo emailing, which is fantastic. There are definitely a lot of applications out there that kind of fill that void of, you know, not only being able to email one photo at a time, so that'll be handy. Also, something else that kind of, you know, Apple has taken the power away from the developers. It's kind of stupid. The landscape email applications, which I never have been a fan of. You can now do email, I think SMS and notes. Can you do the SMS stuff in landscape, Jason?
Ah, boy, good question. I don't know. I think they showed it. Yeah, I think they said. I mean, they said all major apps, and that's a pretty major app.
Yeah, so we're going to see landscape versions of all that stuff, so you can use a landscape keyboard and check out emails and all that in landscape, which is something that a lot of people have been looking for, and that's why we've seen so many applications that kind of do that for us. So, also, I guess there's Shake to Shuffle I heard somewhere. Is that something you heard, Jason?
Yes, they have... The most pointless feature ever to be added to the iPod has now been added to the iPhone and the iPod Touch. Woohoo!
You can turn it off, right? So if you're jogging, it won't just keep changing.
I believe so.
Okay, that's funny.
What a great way to keep people people from moving.
I'm with Jason. I mean, who are the people that like that feature and that are just clamoring for it?
In fact, I'm
a little concerned by the whole shake to undo concept because you gotta really whack that thing in order to get the undo box to pop up. And some people aren't going to want to do that. You got to be kind of nuts to do that on a regular basis, I think. So I'm not quite convinced that shake is something that people should rely on for anything.
Have you tried it? Did you actually try the shake to undo?
No, they didn't let us. They didn't let us touch. But I mean, I've tried other apps that use shaking for various things, and it's kind of hard to do. And like, pCalc has a shake to clear, which is really funny. But there's a button that's clear all, and I press the button. It's easier to press the button than to grab the phone, you know, on the edges in my hand and do a big shake. It's kind of pointless.
Well, Jason, it sounds like what you need is to get the lightsaber app and kind of get that.
Well, that's more gentle, though. The lightsaber app, you can just kind of wave it around. You don't have to snap it in your hand some of the stuff.
I think during the Q&A, someone asked about tethering, and I assume you were there. What was the answer from Apple?
The answer was surprising. They let loose a couple of things in the Q&A, and the answer for tethering is tethering support is built into 3.0, but that's only half the story because you still have to have the providers – allow tethering. So it's in the software. It will work. It's just a matter of the individual cell carriers coming up with a way to support that, because that's basically going to be an extra charge on your bill if you want to do tethering.
Yeah,
but it'll be in the software.
Coming up with how much they want to charge you for that.
Right. But I think that's, I mean, that's a good kind of thing to, because right now, if you want to do this, basically they want to sell you a USB dongle for your laptop, and it's crazy. But if I could add on for some monthly fee, just built-in tethering for my laptop with my iPhone, that seems much more reasonable to me.
And I'm betting that with the, and I'm sure they didn't go into any detail on how that would work, did they?
No, none.
So I'm guessing that with their added, extra frameworks and all that for stuff through the dock connector, I'm betting that the way that's going to work is probably through a USB cable rather than, over Wi-Fi or Bluetooth, because that would
kill
the battery.
I mean, Bluetooth, it wouldn't shock me if it's just Bluetooth, but who knows? There's no way to tell.
Yeah. So was there anything else that came out during the Q&A?
Wow, what was the compatibility thing? I think discovering that there was Bluetooth in the 2G, as we said earlier, the 2G or the first generation Touch was a big surprise, and then the stereo Bluetooth was a big surprise too. So a lot of Bluetooth surprises, I think, more than anything else. I can't think of anything else that was big.
Okay.
Yeah, the thing that's interesting to me is that Bluetooth has just instantly become a much more key component of Mac, iPhone, iPod ecosystem, right? It's the connective tissue for all these devices. And it used to be Wi-Fi, but it's smarter than to move away from Wi-Fi because if my wife and I are in the car, right? We both have iPhones. We don't have Wi-Fi. Right, and the car's got Bluetooth, right? So it just totally makes sense, and it's a subtle change, but I think it's going to have some pretty long-term ramifications.
Well, think about it. Bluetooth, the way Apple's using it, is very much in the spirit of Bonjour. It's this ad hoc network. And the thing about Wi-Fi is you need to set up a network. There's an ad hoc mode in Wi-Fi, but it's not really that ad hoc. It's not a thing that just sort of magically happens. And with Bluetooth, they've done that, and that's really smart because it doesn't interfere with sort of the Wi-Fi and cell networking ways of interacting with the internet. It's all proximity, and they can do it on the fly. It's very clever, and you don't have to screw around with your Wi-Fi settings or set a base station. And I like that they just said, well, look, we can use Bluetooth. They can talk when they're near, and when they're far, they don't. Then you use the internet. That's really smart.
And I'm assuming that it's got a fair amount of bandwidth between the different Bluetooth connections, because, I mean, people are using it for, Bluetooth headsets and microphones and stuff like that, which are transferring audio with, so it's probably going to handle, 100 kilobytes per second kind of thing, which is, for most applications, is just fine.
I'm trying to pull up Bluetooth on the Wikipedia.
We all have to learn about Bluetooth.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, right? Bluetooth is always kind of the, I use it to connect a headset or a microphone or whatever.
We used to joke that the bad kids got Bluetooth in their stocking at Christmas. It was just like, oh, it's great, it's Bluetooth. But yeah, the I know that Bluetooth recently has really come on in terms of the data you can pour out a modern Bluetooth radio. So they must be taking advantage of that.
2.1 megabits per second in some cases, what Wikipedia says for 2.0 EDR.
Yeah, the enhanced data rate. I guess we'll take advantage of that now. But the car is a great example. Actually, I wanted to bring something up about apps, though. One of the problems that I have with the current multiplayer game, when you asked me if I'd played multiplayer games on the iPhone, and I said I hadn't, one of the problems is everybody's got to buy the app, or everybody's got to install the app. If you're in a family, you just have one ID. And, that's one of those things that there's got to be a better way somehow. Maybe there's a one is for pay and the rest of them are free as clients and you have a server. I don't know, but that's, for me, that's actually a big hurdle that you can't do it on the fly because people don't have the app and they have to get the app, and it's not, it would be nice if there was a way maybe even to serve, and I know this isn't in there now, but maybe even a way to serve up sort of a client app to your pals and, they would run that. I don't know, but that's still a big hurdle, is everybody's got to actually have, it's great you can play Scrabble with a friend, but everybody's got to buy a copy of Scrabble to do it.
Right, and I think that that brings up a really good point that I wanted to mention as far as all these applications out there that do contact sharing. you have to, I mean, there are so many applications out there now that do contact sharing. And if you're at the, I mean, if you're at the trade show and you want to say, hey, I want to zip this card over to you, you have to say, wait a second, which one of these, you know, 200 apps do you have? And do I have it? And is it free? And can I get it right now?
Exactly.
And is it even worth it at this point to do that? I think Apple needs to actually add that sort of thing in there. A quick share of contact stuff. And I guess I have that with the SMS thing, but at that point, you've already handed the other guy your card and he has your phone number there.
Right. It certainly would be nice if you had a really quick sort of Bluetooth scan. Is this you? Tap and send it off.
Yeah. Be cool.
Well, what is that? Are you eating like nuts in the background to go with your drink?
I am. Yes, I'm getting close to having passing out from hunger.
So we'll wrap it up here because
that Craig, jingling of nuts
because Craig's going to
hungry.
Die.
Craig's going to die.
Hey,
yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Well,
Herb Everett eats food badly.
It takes a lot of energy to keep the palm fleshy.
Exactly. Now, very quickly, hopefully it's quickly. Can either of you explain the relationship of the of Jason Snell and Craig Hockenberry? Because there's a back and forth that goes on a little bit on Twitter, or is it just
wow? Can it be explained, Craig? I mean, Craig and I have actually only met in person a handful of times, two or three times. The first time actually I ever met Craig in person was I came over to his house when I was down in Southern California and he showed me a beta of Twitterific. But on Twitter, this is one of the great things about Twitter is on Twitter you get to know people. And with me and Craig, not only do we have exchanges that are with our regular personas, but then every now and then we perform Craig's ongoing Chalk Lock comedy sketch, which is fascinating.
It's our alternate personalities.
Yeah, I like to think Chalk Lock is like the it's one of those Saturday Night Live sketches that it's like one of those characters that keeps recurring. I feel like the Chalk Lock is the first sketch comedy character on Twitter.
Yeah.
Yep, yeah.
I've definitely embraced the Chalk Lock.
Well, it allows you to say things that you normally say.
Yeah.
I can be a little bit offensive with the Chalk Lock on, and that's kind of a liberating thing.
Well, absolutely. You're already being offensive with the giant letters. You know, why not just, you know, it's so obvious that you're being offensive that it's not offensive.
Exactly.
What cracks me up are the people who say, oh, I'm going to unfollow you. You're using the caps lock too much. Like, what?
Okay. Yeah, you said something on Twitter. I don't know if that was recent or when I saw it, but I just recently saw that you said, "Do you think that I would use a Chalk Lock if it didn't piss people off?"
Right.
Yeah.
And to be fair to Craig, the only reason he uses the Chalk Lock with the all capital letters is because there isn't a letter style that's higher up than capital letters. If there was, he would use that. But there, yeah. that's like imaginary numbers or what's inside a black hole. It's kind of the human mind can't really comprehend what goes above uppercase, what's above that. But if there was something above that, the Chalk Lock would be on it.
Yeah.
Well said.
But they have uppercase.
That's right.
Yeah. All right. So I understand now. Apparently, I need to embrace my inner Chalk Lock.
Yeah. Chalklock.com.
Oh, yes. I've seen chalklock.com.
Doesn't explain a thing, does it?
Oh no, it made everything perfectly clear to
me. Okay. It didn't become clear until I saw Jason's photo on Flickr of his chalklock key. Yeah.
That's true. You do have the chalklock keyboard. I was really impressed with that.
Yeah, people were really upset because the first version of it I photoshopped in the letters. And then I realized that actually the keyboard contains all the letters needed to spell Chalk Lock. And then it's much better now.
Oh, you actually redid it because I saw that. Okay.
I did. You can spell Chalk Lock
version 2.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Yeah, and I got I made a Chalk Lock shirt for Craig, too, and gave him that. How'd that work out for you, Craig?
Oh, it's great. Yeah.
Michael, don't you have a Chalk Lock on your house?
It's a capital T-shirt.
Yeah, I do have I do have a Chalk Lock on my house. All the locks are Chalk Locks, and of course, then Craig pointed out that he has a master key. So,
of course, he does.
Yeah, he's the Chalk Lord. Anyway, so that we've just gone down a rat hole of
dark road, a dark
road of random.
So wait, Craig is the Keymaster.
He's the Chalk Lord.
Oh, the Chalk Lord. All right.
Yeah. Of the large colony.
Rich chalk-wockety goodness.
All right. I think this is a good point to wrap it up here. We podcast marketplace. We have Audible. They're our sponsor. So get your free credit for an audio book at audiblepodcast.com/iPhone. And of course, check out iPhoneLA.com for more news, tips, and reviews. You can share iPhone tips or request a product or an app to be reviewed by clicking the contact us link on the page. If you want show notes or to check out our iPhone picks, which we didn't do this week because we were too busy talking about the Chalk Lock, you can go to iPhoneLA.com/podcast and get all that stuff. If you want to email us, podcast@iPhoneLA.com. And, of course, once again, Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer, twitter.com/JGamet. Thanks again, Jeff, for being here, as always.
Thanks for having me on. And Craig, I have an application idea for you, a Chalk Lock translator. So people can type into their iPhone what they're saying, and then it can be chalk locked and then tweeted out.
I'm still waiting for the Chalk Lock mode in Twitterific.
The future holds many surprises.
It can be a secret feature. So only if you know... If you know the chalk, you know the secret way to get the Chalk Lock enabled, so it doesn't offend the 80-year-olds on Twitter who accidentally enable it, right?
Jason was talking about the shaking thing, and I've actually had an idea for an application like call it Stamina or something, where it's like you have to shake it 15 or 20 minutes, and all the things start to happen.
I like that. That needs to happen immediately. There is I know there's an application.
Maybe that'll happen in Twitterific. Who knows?
You have to shake it for 20 minutes and then you get the Chalk Lock. But at that point, your arm is so tired you can't type.
Oh, but you're awesome.
Exactly. It just has a pop-up and says, you're awesome. You now have Chalk Lock. There is an application that you can just, it's just a button in it. It just times how long you can hold down the button. So that's a completely useful, and by useful, I mean useless application. Thanks again also to Jason Snell of Macworld Magazine for being here. We always enjoy having you on, Jason.
I was happy to be here and glad to be asked. Thank you.
And twitter.com/JSnell for all of his wonderful Twitters about...
Yes, and occasionally twitter.com/Macworld too. I'm one of the people behind that.
Awesome. And, of course, Craig Hockenberry, the Chalk Lord. He's by day, he works for the Icon Factory, and by night, he is,
Sleep.
Sleep. So he does his chalk locking during the day while he works, too. But yeah. But don't tell his boss.
Yep. Well, I am the boss, so,
Well, is it Gideon? I can't remember. Is that how you pronounce it? Gideon. He's not the boss? For some reason, I thought he was the boss. Or is it a collective?
We got share boss.
You share boss duties.
We got a lot of chiefs and no Indians kind of company.
Gotcha. So don't tell Gideon. So twitter.com/chalkenberry or to the...
Chalkenberry.
Chalkenberry.
Yeah.
So there you go. What's that?
It's been a pleasure. Thanks for loved
having you on. We'll have to do this again soon. And, of course, my Twitter, twitter.com/MichaelJohnston. And with that, another iPhone Alley podcast is in the can.
An iPod. A phone.
How about if I sing to you?
You can sing.
When I was a little bitty boy, my grandma bought me a cute little toy. 9 little bells hanging off of a string. She told me to call it my ding-a-ling-a-ling. My ding-a-ling.
All right, we're good.
My ding-a-ling. So what are we going to do? I haven't even gotten to the punchline yet of the song.
Oh, keep going. We'll just call Jason. So what
are we going to do? Won't you play with my ding-a-ling? My ding-a-ling. My ding-a-ling. Won't you play with my ding-a-ling-a-ling? We're going to use a stylus. You've never heard that before, have you?
I think I heard it, and I tried to forget it.
And I just ruined it for you.
You did. You brought it back.
Man, just think what it'll be like once I actually start drinking.
To get them and put them away and you lose them. Yuck, 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 yuck. No.
Yuck, yuck, no.